Before we get started with this next episode, if you'd like to support the podcast, please visit anchor.fm/Lilith's Left Hand. There are links for the new website, lilithsleftand.com, where you can follow the blog and any other happenings at Lilith's Left Hand. You can share on various social media through the Anchor site, and please consider subscribing there at any of your favorite podcatchers, and rate and review us if the opportunity exists for you. Anything you can do to support the show would be greatly appreciated. Take good care of yourself.
Welcome back to Lilith's Left Hand podcast. It's your co-host, Jessica.
And Emma. Oh, Emma, I jumped in right there. How are you, Jessica? Are you well?
I am well, right? I'm totally well. Yeah. I am super happy. I'm super content, right?
Yeah, super content.
But, you know, there keeps being life experiences that that are flowing past me that you're like, is this the right thing? Is that the right thing?
And who knows?
It's just, who the fuck knows? Good luck. And then I just go, well, you know.
Yeah.
So that's how I am. Know. How are you?
Pretty much the same.
Yeah.
Can't complain, but I can. And will.
Totally. You're like, I wouldn't complain to most people, but you, I will.
Yes.
You're someone I will complain with. So sorry, guys. I don't mean to complain at you. How rude of me. Because earlier, Emma and I were talking about going out and talking in the world sometimes can feel really boring right now. Like, I sometimes will talk to people and they'll ask me a question and I'm like, ugh, are we still talking about this? Like, do we really care about this? Could we talk about anything else? But it's an interesting thing right now that I keep having that happen. I'm sorry that I'm doing it to you guys right now.
No, but I think it's important because – a lot of people feel this way, you know. It's okay to acknowledge it. It's okay. In fact, people should acknowledge, like, when shit isn't going as one might hope. Yeah. It's all good.
I live in a college town, and so it is football season right now. It's college football. And so people definitely, like, want to talk about –
so is that like a big thing in the States?
Oh my gosh. Okay. So,
but there's like the college kids though. I don't get it.
Oh my God. Okay.
I'm sorry if I sound stupid.
Oh no. I love talking about this. I grew up in Pennsylvania and I grew up in the country, so it was a little bit different. But I lived in a small town, rural Pennsylvania, as an adult too. And we lived really close to the football stadium. And in the fall, on Fridays, every Friday night is a huge football game. And in like the country of Pennsylvania, it is a huge deal. Like the news is there. They talk to like the quarterback. I mean, like it's a huge deal. And you can see the lights. And it's a – so I think that's – there's a show called Friday Night Lights. I'll probably watch it on Netflix. I've watched it with my husband who loved it. Anyway – it's a big deal. Oh, wow. My gosh. When we lived as adults, we had these neighbors who would tailgate for their son's game. I mean, they would tailgate in their driveway and then we would all walk to the game. They would walk to the game. But I thought it was like they were like, my son's in the – and they were really nice. So I don't mean it to sound like – but my son's in this game and we're going to have a drink before we go to this. And you would go. I went once with my oldest kid when she was little, and we went, and she had to put head because she has
like ear defenders.
She had to put headphones on because it was so loud. That's Aww. How a big of a deal.
Wow.
Friday night football, and so college in a college town. So you that's like college towns are bigger, so much bigger than this little tiny mm-hmm. town. But it's not as big as a city. So yeah. it's like all of those little tiny towns put together yeah. for one purpose of this college. And they're like, I don't know how many thousand kids go to this school, like 20,000 come in mm-hmm. just for school. So these games are a huge wow. deal.
That's and then to me.
Like, oh, did you see this thing? And you're like, so I like talking about the culture of it because that is mm-hmm. fun. But if yes. you want to talk with me about like going like how did this happen or that happen, I'm like, no. But I yeah. will listen to you talk about if you tailgated, what was that like? What are you, I find that part pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Like we've been doing this every Saturday for that is football season for the past 25 years. Paul knows people it's like
mental.
That. Yeah. Absolutely.
Crazy to me.
They bring them. They make like mixed drinks in the parking lot and people bring RVs and shit. It's crazy, dude. So I guess that's funny because I said it's annoying when people ask me about it. But if they tell me stories about it, I'm fascinated because yeah. it's so different from my life experience. And I'm like, ooh, I don't want to do it, but I like it. It's like watching yeah. a documentary.
Of course. Yes. Yeah.
Well, anyway.
And I suppose it's their choice.
Yeah. It's an interesting choice, right?
Yeah. And today, of course, today. Yep. We are talking about choices.
Yeah, we decided to do an episode on choices, and then it was my choice to just tell you a really lengthy story.
It was your choice.
It was.
But yeah, but choices, it's an important topic. And I feel like what we've spoken about in the previous podcasts, previous episodes, kind of circle the topic of choice in many different ways, you know.
I think.
So we might as well tackle it head on.
Yeah. And I think that sometimes, so we talk about doing all this shadow work and uh-huh. looking into yourself and doing some healing so that you can learn to respond to your life versus react to your life, right? Mm-hmm. So like you're doing all this stuff and then you start to see more choices, like you have, like your choices start appearing in front of you instead yeah. of you feeling like you have no choices. And then all of a sudden you start seeing that all of these things in your life you are actually choosing,
yeah,
which is so great, but it yes. also can be really scary and frustrating.
Yeah, it can be scary. What do you mean by scary? And then I'll tell you what I mean by scary.
I think it's scary because a lot of people grow up having other people tell us what to do all the time. And yeah. then like we think that we're just – like for me, a lot of people, especially growing up, you do what is culturally acceptable. Yes. Even if you know that it's
yeah.
not
– And it takes right. away some of the responsibility, doesn't it?
So, yes, it does. You know. Yeah. So then when people want to be an – like, it, you know, if the whole culture thinks that this is the way, right way to do it
yeah.
and you disagree, then all of a sudden you're the pariah. And like,
yeah.
I don't want to be the pariah, right? So that's the part that's scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because as a – like, people always do that. I mean, forever yeah. have done that.
Yeah. And for me, what's frightening about choices as well as – it's kind of a double-edged blade, you know, because it's exhilarating because you're finally taking control, but then there's a fear that comes with that taking control, you know,
yeah,
because
you
what
right
if
thing?
Shit goes wrong? Yeah, are you doing the right yeah. thing? What if it goes wrong? You know, so choices are liberating and it's great to have choice, but
it opens
we don't always, yeah.
to this vulnerability
yes.
of the most frustrating word for me that is so important, surrender.
Like, yeah.
You know, once you make the choice with the best of your ability.
And that's not a passive way of surrendering. It's not giving up, but you have to commit to your choice. But then you also have to realize that if things go wrong, there will be other choices.
Exactly. Well, this is the choice that you made. This is the outcome. And here's your new choices.
Yeah.
This is, and that way it's not like, so if you surrender to like that was the choice that you made, that means that if it goes right or wrong, you're like, well, that was what I chose. And now what am I going to do?
Yeah.
Instead of like, I think sometimes people get paralyzed by them having done it wrong, that they then can't make any choices.
Yeah.
Which is not great.
No, it's an awful place to be, you know. And if we like look at it from the occult and witchcraft perspective, like that fear can often be intensified because, you know, it's some of the topics that you might be dealing with and some of the things that you might already be doing in your craft, you know, they might already be pushing your boundaries. You know, if you come from a ultra-religious background, for example, so making that choice to kind of leave that in the background and then progress with, you know, something that is demonized from your previous religion, you know, you've made that choice, but it's frightening and it can be so difficult to see clearly when you're in that place and it's not nice.
Yeah, because if you're raised in one culture, right, you have all of this,
conditioning.
Exactly, like, let's talk about, like, Catholic stuff. I remember watching the movie Exorcist.
Yeah.
And it was like, it like very negatively affected me as a child. it wasn't like some scary movie. I was like horrified, right?
Yeah.
And so when people would talk about demons later on in life, I would be like, I can't even discuss this because I had still all that fear on it. And it's so hard, like those ones that you grow up with are so hard to recognize and then let go of.
Yeah.
The longer you have it, the harder it is, I think, to be like, oh, I don't need to think that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean, you know. And I think as well that, I don't know, in witchcraft, I think it's already such a small thing in the bigger scheme of things anyway. So you're already putting your neck on the block. So then when you get to witchcraft and you know, when you first think, right, I'm interested in this. This is a thing. It's real. I'm interested in it. And then you kind of make that commitment to delve deeper and so on and so forth. And, you know, you get right into it. And then you realize that what you thought was just one thing is actually a whole universe of separate things that we've kind of that touch one another in various different ways. Because, you know, I think we've spoken before in the UK, when most people, at least most people of my generation, when you first became interested in witchcraft, most of the resources available to her were Wicca based because, you know, they just were. You know, nobody had internet in their homes. Smartphones weren't a thing. You know, the best thing my old Nokia could do was text, you know, and play snakes. So, you know, so resources were limited. And so for a lot of people, Wicca was the first thing they touched upon. But then when you kind of begin to explore, you see that there's lots of different paths and there's lots of different choices and all of the issues that come with those choices. And you know what I'm talking about, folks. I'm talking about things like cultural appropriation and things that are deemed closed and just all of those kind of things. It can be a bit of a minefield, you know. So then when you're new and you kind of explored a little bit and you presented with all of this whole wide world of new things, like, where do you start? So that can be frightening as well. Or not frightening, but it can be paralyzing because there's so much choice.
There's so much choice. And so how do you choose the right thing? And how do you know it's right? And so, like, if you don't do all that other stuff we've talked about.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know if you're making the right choices because
yeah.
You're not, you're even, you're if you knew, from yourself.
It would be, yeah. Yeah, precisely.
But it's so funny because the more I open up to my own path, the more choices that I have. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that can feel a little, well, that to me feels exhilarating. I like that part.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's something that comes with a bit of experience. Once you kind of find your feet and people are always changing. We're constantly in flux. So a few years down the line, your opinions and thoughts and ideas will be completely different, and that's natural. But I think for the most part, we kind of have to be open to choices and be open to making mistakes, because that's how we learn. That's how I tell my kids. So I work in an autistic school, and the other day we were learning about the bones in the human body and the proper scientific names. And, it was a recap lesson, and one of the kids said to me, "Oh, but what if I get it wrong?" And I'm like, "But it's okay if you get it wrong. It's not a big deal. That's how we learn when we get things wrong, So, and the same applies to us as adults and to us as occultists. We can get things wrong. It's okay.
Yes. And I have had students tell me things like they want to do certain things or contact mm-hmm. certain spirits, but they're afraid they're going to do it wrong. And then we have to have the conversation, because that is something that we carry on into adulthood. That sometimes we just never do the things that we are interested in, because we're something about us is telling us that we do everything wrong.
Yeah. And that fear can be crippling. The fear of, and it's not sometimes necessarily an actual tangible fear, but sometimes it can be the fear of disappointing people or the perception that you're letting people down. If you're in a group or you have a mentor and if you do have a mentor or teacher, let me just tell you, you're not letting them down or disappointing them.
And there's also this thing too where people are like, or it's not, like they're disappointing themselves because nothing happens. And people think that a lot. And those people, I think, are going to have a harder time with magic because they're not really invested in thinking that it works, right?
Yeah.
So they don't always have eyes to see when things work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think does. Sometimes people don't make the choice, because then there would be like, because they're coming at it from a pessimistic, like, it doesn't work. And you're like, well, what if it does work and it will work, and then you should just go into it?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And I feel like people, when they're on the left-hand path, I feel like they've made that choice, because obviously it is a choice. But I feel most people, or I'd like to believe that most people make that choice because they want to explore all of those things that we've talked about in a way that is free from all of that kind of stuff, like the stigma that comes with certain things and the fears that are attached to those stigmas. And it's like a chain reaction, isn't it?
And it also reminds me, though, like sometimes I think the thing that I was talking about, it won't work, is because people are asking for stuff that is like
not,
you wouldn't even be on the left-hand path thinking about it. So I
be real.
Yes.
Like, manage your expectations.
Yeah, like see magic for what it is. It's energy and it moves, and we have the ability to manipulate I don't actually like to manipulate it, because that I think is what happens sometimes in a negative way. Like there's this really cool energy and people want to work with it, but they want to use it for like something that is negative, and so it funnels this energy in. You can bring it to yourself if you know how, and then you're manhandling it, and they want it to do something for you, and it transforms the energy into something else. But you could take that same energy and call it to yourself and interact with it in a way that energy would work with your energy in a more harmonious way.
Yeah.
And so I don't like to think about the manipulating energy, because I think that you absolutely can do that.
Yeah.
But it's not putting out the product in a way that you want it to go out into the world, instead of like taking your time to
I think when you understand things properly, so you can make the choice to rush something with brute force, or you can take the time to understand something and work with it in the ways that you suggested, in a way that is more, perhaps more natural and definitely more beneficial. And actually, if you want to look at it in that way, more productive, you know. Brute force will only get you so far in whatever. If you go back to kickboxing and boxing, like my coach always used to say, being naturally strong is good, or naturally talented at something is good, but hard work, or proper hard work, you know, training properly, eating properly, looking after yourself, doing all of those hard things. So hard work, actually, and understanding how your body works, and, you know, understanding how magic works, you know, it always trumps natural talent or natural strength, you know. So, yeah, brute force is useful for some things, but not for everything.
Yeah, because it doesn't really consider all the ass. It's not like... And when you're doing that kind of thing, I think it is for a smaller circle of influence. So it only needs to go out so far. But when you use energy in a way that you want it to benefit the actual, like, if from an animistic, like a perspective of animism, you have to think about all the things that you're interacting with. And 100%. So that's going to change that. So like you could work with Saturn and get and manipulate some of that energy for some really destructive things for yourself. You know, or you could use, you know, try and work with that energy in a way to transform something in a beneficial way. Does that make sense? I feel like I just talked about magic, like you can call in the devil to destroy the world, and that's not.
No, it does make sense. It does
that
make sense.
That is not what I mean. I mean,
our like
the government,
we get it.
Law, everything. Words are magic. All of that stuff is magic. You know, the law is magic. How do you think that we still all?
Yeah.
Live in systems that don't work for us if there's not a bunch of magic behind that. So I guess what I'm saying is you can use these same energies to be oppressive.
Yeah.
Or the opposite of that,
yes.
Which is just kind of allowing the world to be without your constant effing judgment.
Yeah.
You know. So I don't know what that has to do with choice or how I got this to that point, you guys. I'm sorry.
Well, that's what it's like sometimes, isn't it? You know, because like witchcraft and all of, and the occult and all of those things, you know, we talk about them so often as, you know, as being separate. Well, we don't talk about them as being separate, but we talk about them as distinct things, and we don't necessarily always consider the ways how everything is interlinked in often very subtle ways. You know, the big ways are very obvious, but it's like a, I don't know, everything's connected. Some of the threads are like wool, really thick, and you can see them. Some of it is like invisible cotton. You can't see it, but it's there and it's connected. And so that's how we got onto that, because we all make choices. Our choices lead us down the path one way or the other. We come to a crossroads. We have to make the choice, you know, of which path to take. And yeah, everything is linked, and everything, we are where we are because of the choices we've made previously, you know?
Yeah. And you can, and the best part is you can just choose whatever, right?
Yeah.
They're not like, it's not just two things or three, you know. It reminds me of the Four of Cups.
Yeah.
You know, like the Four of Cups is generally a person that can see three cups, and then the fourth cup is somewhere unseen, right?
Yeah,
like there, so like, you know, there's a lot of choices that can open up for us if we pay attention.
Yes.
100%. And so it's really, sometimes it feels like this or that.
And I think
it doesn't have to be.
No. And I think for me, important kind of an important issue that comes up when we consider choice is the issue of will. Because, you know, I might be a little bit contentious here, but I fucking hate the phrase intention is everything. Like, fuck off. Like, you know, it's not. If intention was everything, I would be living La Vida Loca.
Also, what perspective is that intention coming from?
Yeah. Like, but do you know what I kind of see it as well? You know, I kind of view how the concept of intention is viewed in witchcraft in the same way as karma is viewed. Like, for example, in many Western countries, karma, you know, you hear people say, well, karma will get them. Karma's a bitch. What goes around comes around, you know. That's not karma. Not in the proper, you know. And I feel intention is the same. So if you think about what intention is, like, I don't know, what do people mean when they say intention is everything? Like, if you know, because I don't know what they mean.
I don't know. I thought intention, like, I remember hearing and saying the word intention a whole bunch, but then I remember one time sitting down and it actually feeling like I was had an intention for the first time.
Yeah. So what does it mean? So for me, when I say when I intend to do something, you know, how are people meaning it? Because I don't know. Do they mean it in the sense where intention is everything because that's the planning stage? It's the kind of seed, if you will. So, you know, like if you want to grow some food, it all you know, you grow it with the seeds. Everything starts from the seed. Is that what they mean?
Or they could also mean it comes from a good place too. Like if you're intending something shitty, like something for yourself, but it's super shitty to everybody else, maybe that's not the best intention.
Yeah.
I think that sometimes too.
Because I think, you know, how often it's portrayed, you know, like when we hear it or when I hear it, I can't help but cringe because for me, I hear a lot of people say it. It feels like a very fluffy thing to say in that it's a bit of a cop out in that they don't want to put the work in because intention is everything. But what do they mean by that? So if an intention is how we've just been talking about it, I understand that. I get that. But what do they mean? Like, what's the common understanding of the usage of the word in witchcraft circles? Let us know. Give us your opinions on that one, people.
I would love
to. I'm genuinely interested.
Because Paul does this really amazing intention group and, you know, it's based on the intention of eight. Book,
yes,
and all of a sudden, I've
done that with him,
yeah, and it's so great because they pick an intention and they're very intentional about the word choice,
and I get that, I get all of
and
that.
Pray, yeah. Well, what I'm saying is, I never really heard of they sit and meditate on the same intention that they all choose together, and it's like for 10 minutes. So, what the heck do other people mean? Because I just learned about that not that long ago,
yeah.
And I know,
well, I don't know.
What do normies mean when they say that? Because normies just say shit like that.
Yeah, of course. And so that's what I, because for me, when it comes to like magic and workings, I talk about will a lot. Like, will is so important to me in
terms of. Do you mean like your true will? Because I hear people talk about their true will as being their like their truest self, like their like sun, their inner.
I suppose it's kind of like that, I suppose, but I don't know. So what I mean by will, so being a strong will. So I can remember going to my moot once and we had this as a kind of discussion group, like intent versus will. And we were kind of talking about the differences and I was like, I don't like the word intent when it's used in this way we've just discussed. For me, will seems better. One of the people at the moot was saying, well, what do you mean when you say willed? Because I've willed myself to win the lottery and that hasn't happened. I'm like, but that you can't will yourself to win the lottery. That's not how will works. You can wish to win the lottery, you know. But for me, will is like something, it's like the, I don't know, I like to see my will as like iron, and you know, it's strong will. I'm quite a strong-willed person when I want to be. If it's something I'm passionate about, I'm strong-willed. And for me, it's the difference between kind of going along with the flow and being carried along by the flow, you know. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You might come to some places you like, and then sometimes the flow might be a bit stormy. If that's what you like, that's good. Whereas for me, will is, okay, the flow is going that way, but I don't want to go that way. I want to go this way, and it's going to be hard, but I'm going to go with it, and I'm going to do it, and it's hard, but fuck yeah.
Oh, it's like the lighthouse of yourself, yeah. Right?
Yes.
It's like the thing that's pulling you in the direction of what matters to yeah. you versus so, what matters yes. to that flow like, of
going
other.
Going back to kickboxing and boxing, when you're fighting in the ring, it's a weird mindset to get in, and it's your will that carries you through, because your mind is a fucking traitor. Your mind is a traitor, you know. I can remember that I used to jog a lot and run a lot, and oh, I hate running. Running is not the one, you know, but it's good cardio for when you need good cardio and all of that. And I used to have several routes of varying distances, and because sometimes you need a hard, fast sprint, you know, because that gets your anaerobic fitness up, and sometimes you need to get those muscles tired. So when you're in the ring, you get used to that feeling of tiredness. And on one of my longer runs, it was a circuit through the town, and I knew all the shortcuts. So as I'm approaching a shortcut, it's not really a shortcut because I could never live with myself if I did the shortcut, you know. But as I'm running, and I know, and I'm approaching this point, and I know that around that next corner, if I go down this alleyway, I'm going to be home in 5 minutes. Whereas, and I'm tired, and running is painful, and it hurts, and it's not enjoyable until the end when you get the rush of endorphins. But when you're in the moment, if you're not a natural runner, and I'm not a natural long distance runner, it's fucking awful. It's torture, mental torture and physical torture. And so as I'm approaching all these shortcuts, I'm thinking, my mind's saying, Emma, if you just go down there, you'll be home and it'll be over. But my will is saying, do you want to fucking win your fight? And I feel that's important in magic. And when we go through the hard times, that's what sharpens your will, you know. I was saying to a friend the other day that it's weird because, like, when I was growing up, we were wild. You know, my parents worked and we were wild and it was great. But I think of my own children now and I think, shit, I would die if they did some of the stuff. You know, times change.
Yeah.
You know. And so life gets easier, I feel, for each generation. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way, because everybody has their own issues. But I feel it's those hard times that we might not like. And I feel the same. It's the same in magic. You know, it's those hard times when we have to make those hard choices, when we're presented with hard choices and we have to make the hard choices. It's those times where we truly grow and our will becomes sharper and stronger and directs our magic. So for me, that's really important in terms of magic and occult practice.
So will is more for you. Will is like... Well, there's no one, you know.
Yeah, I don't know if, yeah, that's what I mean. So there's nothing that is, there's no one part that is everything.
Yeah.
I guess that's what I'm saying in the long-winded way.
No, it's great. I was thinking about it. And when you were talking about it, I remember running and I always do the thing where my mind is like, just get to that thing.
Yeah.
And then you get to that thing and you're like, okay, just get to this thing.
Yes.
You're like, okay. So you can set your mind up to be helpful, or there are those days where you're like, it reminds me of those TV shows where you have like the good guy and the bad guy on the shoulders.
Yeah.
You're like, which one is in charge of getting me through this?
Yeah. And I feel like when you go through those hard times, whatever those hard times might be, whether it's running or, you know, because I feel like your mind has many parts as well. And you know, like when we do meditation, I often describe it as to people, because the first thing I hear from most people is because I invited a friend of mine, my work colleague, to come and do meditation with us. And with my kind of meditation group. And she's like, oh, I don't know. Can I do it? And I'm like, well, why can't you do it? Why do you think you can't do it? She's like, well, I don't think I can like silence my mind. I don't think I can empty my mind. I'm like, but that's not what you're doing. You know, yeah. And I see meditation, well, some parts, the first stages of the meditation, you know, because when I start a meditation with my group, I start by focusing on the body and relaxing it. And all of those things, really what that aim is to quiet what I kind of call the chattering mind. You know, it's that little daily monologue that is with you all the time as you're doing those, you know, and it might not be a voice, it might be images all the time, or whatever it is that is that constant stream that's always just da 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 da. It wants to be distracted by something, so then the deeper parts of your mind can, and that's where I see will and all of those areas coming together. So yeah,
using your choices to hone your will,
yeah,
you know, in a way that serves you. And learning to put that little self somewhere for a moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like I do literally think about a little version of me sitting at the bottom of my seat sometimes when I meditate, when I'm going through like, ugh, you know? And for some reason, she's always sitting at a school desk. I'm not sure what's up with that.
I always see myself in those first stages of meditation. I see myself kind of, it's almost like an out-of-body experience where I'm looking down on myself and I'm laid on a stream bank and there's a nice little stream and it's lovely countryside and a sunny day and it's beautiful. And all my thoughts are the stream. So, you know, it's okay to acknowledge them, but then let them go.
I do a lot of, I'm in the stream. We used to go to this really amazing hot springs and they have this really cold river. And I always imagine myself laying in that stream for that water to go by.
Yeah.
I like that visual. I think the word intention is, it's just, it's just one of those words I think that people use that don't, and you don't always think about what it means.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's a
word. Should, because words are power, words are magic, you know?
Yeah. But sometimes you're just not, it's like meditation sometimes too. Like you sit down and you're like, I'm going to go through the motions of doing this, even though you're fighting yourself and blah, blah, blah. Eventually you just sit down and you're like,
oh. Yeah.
And you have figured it out. And I think the same thing with intention. So I do think that the word is thrown around a ton. Without people really having put a lot of feeling or and like,
yeah,
but then at some point it really feels different. It feels like something. So I think that sometimes people just throw around words and it's not to be because they're trying, like, I can think of me doing this all the time when I was younger, like just saying a bunch of stuff. And it was not because I was trying to be flippant or, but it didn't mean it, you know, it's like memory. You're just saying stuff.
Yeah. But I think as we do have to be careful about how we use words.
Yes, though. You're right.
Just because, and I think a lot of the issues that we face in our occult communities, because people say words without really thinking about what they mean. Like, you know, and for a large extent, we don't need to overthink like everyday stuff, but important words that, for, you know, for new people who are coming in, and they hear intention is everything. You know, it's important to have discussions about why we use certain words and what they might mean to individuals, because I'm sure it means many different things to many different people.
It's funny because it makes me think about how important it is to have other people in your life that might have an idea of what words mean to them so that you can learn about it. So it's good to find communities where we can talk about what intention means. And Paul, I keep saying my husband, but everybody knows it's Paul. He's our producer. He is a co-host on another podcast that I do. He is like my favorite person. And anyway, his dad is Hindu and has been going to this temple every year for decades. And so Paul took me there, you know, before we had kids. And so he has all these books, and he has this one book, Merging with Shiva, Hinduism's Contemporary Metaphysics. And I remember when we first got this book a long time ago, reading it and it not making much sense to me.
Yeah.
And then the other month, I opened it up, and there is this really cool beginning part that is like handwritten notes. And I read it, and I just started crying because I was like, because it actually meant, I understood everything that it was trying to say in that one part, where before it sounded like nonsense words. And
yeah,
like, because sometimes I worry that I talk on this podcast or other podcasts and other people hear it and it's like,
we all feel that way.
Goobity-gobbity. And it will to some people, right? But to other people, it means so much. And so I think that it's so cool to be in a community to be like, hey, guys, what do you think intention means?
Yeah. And it's okay to have different opinions and to not agree.
Yeah.
You can not agree. You know, you can disagree in... I disagree with lots of different people who I'm very close to on many different issues, but it's okay.
Well, and we're all in such different parts of our path that some person precisely. Might be in one place that they could explain it in a way, you know, to really open that up for us.
And I think actually you make an important, a really important point, because it's always important to go back and have a look at your choices that you made previously. So as an example, like when I first started out, like I say, Wicca was the first thing. And I'm talking like many, many years ago when I was a teenager. So Wicca's like the first thing that you come across, at least for me it was. And, you know, for a long time you try and make it fit. And I'm not Wiccan. And for a long time I was turned off by anything remotely Wiccan, just because it was like, I felt like I wanted to get away from it. And there was no getting away. I don't know. However, I feel that I was... like, and I was young, so, you know, a lot of that comes with youth, I feel. You're so sure of yourself that, no, this is not what I want to do. This is what I'm going to do instead. So you make that choice. I feel that's like the benefit of youth. You make those choices. It's like the fool card, isn't it? You make the choice to go on the journey. I feel like we all start there.
And that's the best part about the fool card. You have to, like, allow yourself to be the fool to make the choice, because it's like, you know, going, especially when it's in a magical or occult way, you're like going against what is culturally acceptable, because we don't, I mean, like, there is a reason that the occult is called the occult.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. The practices are hidden and unknown and people don't want to put it out there. And
one of the things that I hated so much was like the threefold law, or the law of return, or whatever you want to call it. And again, at the time, my information was extremely limited, as we've already discussed. But I just couldn't bear it. Ugh. However, you know, you go along your path, you learn different things. And then it's important that we come back and we revisit the choices that we made, because that's how we grow. And for me, I went back and I had a look at Wicca. And I'm not Wiccan. However, when you look through it, and, you know, and I don't just mean the founding fathers, when you look through the practices that have evolved and the practices that are ongoing and the new people coming in, and, you know, when you look at it as a whole and you really delve deep into some of the things and kind of scratch beneath the surface, you kind of see a different meaning. And I think a lot of that comes with age and experience, or experience, not necessarily age. It comes with experience, and you can kind of then see, I don't know, it just presents the choices you made in a different light, and then it allows you to then make new choices, you know?
Oh, for sure. It reminds me of that blog post I made for our podcast. We made, so Emma and I are making a community called Lilith's Left Hand Cult Collective, or an occultist collective.
Yeah.
And so we were just getting the website together, and so I made a blog post, and in it I talk about how I grew up Catholic, and then at one point I was just like, ugh, I hate it. Anything that sounded like Catholic, anything that sounded remotely Catholic, I couldn't get into it. I was just like, and so much so that, you know, I went to school and before when I was, I got two bachelor's degrees when I was young, when I was like 20, one was in Italian and one was in French. And like, we had all of these courses in philosophy. Like it was a huge, like we had to take those classes. And anytime they would talk about like, which is crazy, I had to take full, I mean, not had to, but I got to take all these philosophy classes. But anytime, like I couldn't unlock my mind to anything that had to do with Catholicism. Like, I couldn't even really, I was like, nope, can't relate to it. I was so exactly how I was. To it.
But then when you're like that, you miss all the little nuances. And, you know, when you're in that frame of mind, it puts you off wanting to dig a little bit deeper.
Yeah. You know? And there's so much, I don't know, guys. Yeah. There's so much really important mythology in the Bible that I find fascinating.
Yeah. I think as I've got older, I keep saying that. I think that is an element of it as well. But as I become more experienced and more open, and I don't know, I'm going to say something really fucking corny, but you see the beauty in all of, like, in many traditions, even the ones that are generally have a bad rap. There's something in there.
Yeah.
You know, otherwise, why are people still there?
Yeah. There's all kinds of fun information. And sometimes you're like, ooh, this is like a complete inversion of what reality should look like. This in itself is a hint, you know, like reading all this stuff and being open to hearing it really opens you up to not, I'm not even suggesting that like you would believe it or, but you could use it. There's lots of energy and magic available in those spaces, but also you can learn, you know, what choices not to make.
Yes.
And what kind of weird inversions are really happening. So, I find
it's that fascinating, isn't it, really?
You know? Yeah. So it's yes, I'm so glad that we have grown out of just hating our original original religious experiences.
Endeavors. Yes. Yeah.
Which is, it makes sense. I mean, you got to rebel against stuff. When you're a kid, you don't know what to rebel against. You don't really know what rebellion is. And then you grow up and then you realize rebellion is like taking care of yourself, giving yourself space, you know, like all these different things. It's not always this huge.
Yeah.
These huge over, it's like not always the guy standing outside with like screaming at people, right?
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, the important thing is to make those choices that are meaningful to us. So when it comes to resistance, people have to make hard choices about what they're willing to sacrifice, what they're willing to give up, what they're willing to put on the line, what they're willing to risk, you know. Because when I talk about resistance and oppression, and, you know, a lot of the times if we look at, so in the UK, they were proposing, and I don't know if it's going through, there were like major proposals put forward to the policing bill about how they police protests and stuff like that. Really draconian, very awful. I don't know what's going on with that. But yeah, so when I talk about resistance and rebellion, they span all sorts of things, you know, in all areas of life, from political to personal to magical, because all of those things are connected, whether we want to believe they are or not. So when we decide, okay, when we make that choice to fight for what we believe in, we have to make hard choices with that, you know. We have to be prepared to make hard choices. And I think that's when making choices can get really real, you know.
But also make sure that you are, I think that, I know I was talking to my dad the other day and we were just talking about his real life experiences, and he has some friends and I think he called it the LGBTQ whatever, I don't know all the letters, community. That's what he said. And he has all these new, like a couple new friends, and he was just talking about how wonderful they are and how he really likes them. And I was like, and previously, I know he had said something like he just doesn't, he wants people to be able to live however they want, and it doesn't matter to him, and it doesn't, he doesn't want things being shoved down his throat, right? And so we were having this conversation, and I was like, yeah, but what can we talk about your actual lived experience? And so we talked about his actual lived experience, and with all the people that he knows in his real life, they're all just lovely, wonderful people. Where are we getting? Where are we getting the ideas that we're oppressed by things? Where does this come from?
I suppose it depends on who's saying it.
So what I'm saying
So you say that, and I know, like, please don't take it. I know that you are not like this, but you say where we're getting the idea we're oppressed from. But I'm sitting here as like a black woman, you know, I know where I'm getting oppressed from.
Yeah.
They're
trying to make everybody feel oppressed by other things. So then when we're all getting confused because all of these people are feeling oppressed from literal nonsense.
Yes, we have to distinguish between real oppression and real oppression. You know, right. We have to make the distinction between actual oppression and someone's done something I don't like, I'm oppressed, you know.
Exactly. That is exactly what I'm talking about. So then all of these people out and not, I mean, like, my dad can't be the only one. Lots of people are like,
absolutely.
And all kinds of people.
I suppose.
By vaccinated.
So my partner is, so my partner is white. Okay. And grew up, so we're both working class. For me, class is like, you know, class solidarity, all of that shit. So he grew up working class like me. And we talk about white privilege, and he hears that a lot in the news, and he's like, what the fuck is white? So, you know, because he's not in any of the circles I'm in, he's very matter of fact, you know, he's not political or anything like that. And so he doesn't necessarily know all of the, he's not involved in lots of the conversations that are occurring around those issues, you know? And so it's like, we talk about it. It's like that, you know, that's okay. And the thing is, what he's saying is, and I think it's not necessarily when people feel oppressed, it's not necessarily they're oppressed, but they feel forgotten. And I think that's important to acknowledge, because when we don't acknowledge that, that's where I see divisions growing.
And it's seeds that are planted and for division on purpose.
Precisely.
And it's aimed at poor people. It's aimed at poor people, in my opinion. Like, and all of us are poor. I'm talking about, if you're middle class, you're also
like the
1%. It's aimed at you. And so we need to be fighting each other. We need to be an oppression. Like, we need to use aggressive words so the other person gets all crazy about it. But like, in your real life, most of these people could walk down the street and talk to their neighbor who is a Republican, and they could have a nice conversation. I'm your neighbor.
Absolutely.
Or this thing or that thing. But then there is this like weird layer on top to make people feel oppressed by nonsense, so that we don't actually acknowledge the actual oppression that has occurred
and that's why
is currently occurring.
Yeah, and that's why community is so important.
Yes.
Because in community there are so many different people. You know, community is a bit of a, I don't know, it's a bit of a catch-all word, isn't it?
Yes.
So we, you know, you can belong to a if you're gay, you might belong to the gay, we say you belong to the gay community. You know, if you're black, you belong to the black community. You know, so we choose, so sometimes when we're defining communities, we're lumping people together based on one shared trait, you know. But when I talk about a real community, I'm talking about people coming together, you know, it can be online, it can be in the real world, but it's about people coming together in actual mutual aid. And those people can be from all walks of life, and you don't have to like those people, you know. I might think someone's a dick, you know, but if they're being oppressed, I will fight for their freedom.
People are,
they're a dick.
Yeah, they're allowed, you know, to
I don't like them, but yeah, doesn't mean I want to see them oppressed. Do you know what I mean? So
yeah,
that's why a community becomes so important, like a real community, you know?
Yes.
And then all of those
works and...
Yeah, and all of those arbitrary divisions that we talk about as being kind of manufactured to create division, then all of those disappear because we know those people. Those people become our lived experiences. Yeah. You know?
That's yes, thank you. Because that is exactly what and my dad was like getting really frustrated with me.
Yeah.
Because I kept, because he was like, I'm like, but who's doing that to you?
Yeah.
And no one, right? So if mm-hmm. you don't actually look at the news and hear that stuff.
Yeah.
Because a lot of the stuff that you would hear on the news that's brought up, like this group fighting that group, is manufactured to be, you know.
Yeah.
To cause division. So if you would just look around in your life, and then the people that are shitty, you just don't have to hang out with them.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Yeah, that's exactly it. Because we have to kind of the danger is that we get caught up in echo chambers. So then we're only with people who share our own opinions. You know, if we don't do that work where we get on with different people in our community, whether we like them or not, we then, the alternative is we end up in echo chambers where we're only surrounded by people who think the same, do the same, act the same as us. And then that's in itself is a fallacy, because then you believe that that's, you know, it's the same in the wider world. And then that's where it becomes easy to see people as other, you know, it becomes easy to other people when you're in that little kind of echo chamber.
Yeah, and then you get that way of like wanting to be like, I am against this person and this thing. And then like your whole thing is about being against this thing. And so your choice is not to just do something else. It's like gets all wrapped up in being against a thing that you want to not exist in your life.
Yeah.
So like your whole identity gets wrapped up in being something that you, if you could choose to have the world not have that thing.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? I mean,
yeah, it does. So for example, I see what happens quite a lot in kind of online leftist spaces is that if someone dissents against the status quo, the leftist status quo. Mm-hmm. For example, I know someone who who's leftist and rallies against cancel culture. Because, and his logic, and we see it happening, his logic is that, you know, okay, you can look at a group of people and say, I don't like what these people are saying. It's hurtful. We're going to cancel them. And it makes sense in one way, because those people are morons. You know, they're full of hatred. They're fucking arseholes. Get rid of them. But then the danger is the same tools that are developed to be used against those people are used against people like us as well.
Exactly. Who's in charge of the cultural nonsense.
Yeah, and it doesn't really deal with the initial problem of that division and hatred. Instead, you just silence it. It goes underground. The divisions become more deeply rooted. You know, it's...
Feels like a tool of aggression.
We have to tackle those fucking arseholes that we don't like, you know, the fascist types and all those lot. We have to tackle those and that problem in a different way. Otherwise, it doesn't go away, you know?
Yes. It's just getting bigger and bigger and more divisive. And now there's
And so
more
the choices we make on how we police ourselves and our communities, they have to kind of be meaningful choices. We can't rush into those choices. And we have to, who are making those choices for us? We have to look at all of those things. Who's making the choices? Who's going to have control once we've made those choices? You know, we talk about choice and it seems such a kind of airy-fairy subject, but once you get into the meat of it, it has deep implications.
Yeah, because most of us grow up in a way that you don't really have many choices and things yeah. are chosen for you and religions yeah, are and a lot
the
that
choices
way,
and... are often like, I grew up poor choices are often you have to choose the lesser of two evils
yeah
you know and oftentimes that's not really any choice
yeah yeah you a lot of times you're just doing what you can
yeah
but also not reacting is a choice it doesn't mean it's a bad choice mm-hmm. sometimes it's a great
no
choice.
Sometimes it, yeah but absolutely
you know and if we refuse if we are unable to see our choices in front of us then we take away all our own power yeah. then we're completely disempowered then we're feeling depressed or yeah. sad or like super pissed
we have
off.
To make informed choices and, where possible with the information we have available to us
and then see them as choices
yeah
you know what I mean like yeah. we don't have to make a choice just because everybody says that we don't have to say like this or that well I yeah. say I choose neither well yeah. you have to choose this
and
or
it
that.
Can take no. a lot of will to do that mm-hmm. as well it
yeah,
can be
that's
a hard
a lot
thing
of cultural,
to not yeah
shit to deal with
yeah
to not agree with this or that
yeah absolutely
but it's still a choice
yes
and it can be scary yeah. like I said at the beginning scary
yes
but good stuff so I think that this just highlights how important it is to find other people in your community that you can talk with and be open to hearing other people's perspectives and experiences yeah. So that we can kind of shine light on stuff in a non-judgmental
yeah. And
way.
Listening to other people and their opinions, even when they differ with our own, doesn't necessarily take choice away from us. Well, it doesn't
no.
take choice away from us. It doesn't diminish
no,
our choice.
Not.
Choice isn't pie.
Yeah. I don't understand that. I guess I just don't understand. There is the idea that you shouldn't give people platforms to say stuff that is wrong, considered to be wrong.
Yeah.
I don't actually.
I think when it comes down to like individual,
that.
I suppose it depends on individual venues, performances, you know, all of those kind of things. It kind of just depends where it's happening.
Yeah. Like, when I was growing up, there was a KKK rally in my town.
Yeah.
They were allowed to, like, parade. They had a permit.
Yeah.
And so they were allowed to parade through the town. And I remember sitting my dad and I sat really far away. And I remember because I was a kid. And we were like, what the hell is happening?
Yeah.
And he was like, look at this. And he took me to witness this weird thing.
But is that cancel culture? If they weren't allowed, is that actually cancel culture? Because what are the rallies? I don't really understand. So, you know.
I didn't like it. I just want to put it out there that I'm not advocating to have KKK rallies. Like,
I don't think anybody thinks that.
Okay, please. It was like a really weird thing that happened. I mean, I was like, whoa, this actually exists was what I got of it. Which I guess is good to see react. Like, you're like, oh shit, people like that do exist.
Yeah. And I suppose, like, the similar argument is free speech. Where does free speech end and hate speech begins? And I suppose we have to be discerning and we have to look at the influence people have. And actually, so for example, if there's going to be a debate at a university, the people might not be very pleasant people. They might not have very pleasant views. Okay. So a lot of the times you see people come to debates in universities and you'll see the whole student audience get up and walk out as a protest. That's not cancelling them. They just don't want to, it's their choice not to hear what that shitbag has to say. You know? So I don't know, context and all of that thing comes into it.
Yes. So what you're saying is it's not black and white. What we need is more nuance in our communities because there is so much about cancel culture that is like super annoying. But there's also certain things that I think are really, I don't like what we were just talking about. Very nuanced an interesting yes. thing. I actually, so we
I suppose for me, sorry, just going back to KKK rally. Yeah. Like, what are the points of rallies? I don't know. What's the purpose?
We didn't actually hear. It was like because we were so far away. I could just
for
see
me,
them walking,
if they hadn't have been allowed, that probably wouldn't have been cancel culture. If it's just a case of they're turning up because to show, you know, they're turning up to show their power. And I don't know. What's the point of a rally? Is it to show? I don't know. Is it to gain supporters? I don't know. What is the point?
Is it like I'm genuinely perplexed. We exist.
Because it's so weird to me, you know, because it's not something we really do in the UK, rallies.
Oh,
I don't know.
They have rallies here all the time for all kinds of stuff.
Unless like, I'm just boring.
I've never seen
been
a KKK rally since that time. I was like 14. There's rallies here all the time.
I suppose for me, cancel culture, if you're cancelling someone, for me, it centres around debate. And if you're cancelling what the other person is saying without even listening to them first.
Oh, see, the cancel culture I always think of as a complete lack of debate, which is the problem that I have with it.
Yes, I suppose that's where I come from as well, now you put it like that. Yeah,
and
that's what I mean.
We have this app or this website called Nextdoor, and it was like the only social media I would look at because like that's where like if I find a dog walking down the street and it doesn't have a collar, I put it in my backyard and then I put it on the Nextdoor site. Well, it's also apparently – like people just talk on there. I think it's the new Facebook or something.
Yeah.
And people just say crazy ass shit. Like they see a black person walk down the street and then somebody's like, did anybody know that black guy? And you're like, are you kidding? Or like there is somebody coming to my house and knocking on the door and he says he's from the, I don't know. Just like really crazy shit. Like, and I think, oh, I need to stay away from that house. Like,
yes.
That person. So I hate that website and that group, but sometimes I do think it's a way for me to know what.
Yeah. Well,
not bothered.
We have kind of a similar thing for my town. It's a Facebook group and it's like the town name and spotted. And it's anonymous. So it's run by some people. Nobody knows who runs it. And then, yeah, so nobody knows who runs it, but then, and it's fucking great for like a laugh or for gossip because there's lots of different types of one, but this one's the dodgy one where it's always like, I don't know, there's always town gossip because it's a small town and I generally don't like that stuff, but sometimes you just gotta have a look. You find out lots of news on there.
Walking through my extra property.
I don't know. It's never like that. It's more like, videos of people fist fighting in the street because they're drunk.
That sounds way better than people fighting over like trying to get to a trail and cutting through someone's extra acre of land. They're like, well, I'll put up fences, you asshole. Like, oh my gosh. It's just I would much rather, I don't know.
It's good for like, you know, I don't know. I love it. I love the town I live. I love the people.
It sounds nice. I want to come visit you and go to pubs.
Yes. So earlier I was telling Jessica, we were talking about pubs. And for the British people among us, you'll know what I mean when I say going out, you know. There are levels of going out in England and the UK.
Yeah, we were talking about like having drinks after work and going to one pub versus another pub versus
there's many different types of pubs.
And then I laughed because I said going out.
Oh, I'm gonna have to post now. There's a funny comedian and I don't know if you guys know of him because he's like a cockney, he's so funny. His name's Mickey Flanagan and he does a really funny stand-up routine about going out. I'm gonna put it on like the social medias, so check
it
out.
Look it up.
I'm gonna send it to you, Jessica.
Flanagan is such a good name to Mickey Flanagan.
It's hilarious.
What a wonderful name.
The funniest person.
Yeah, please send it to me.
I will. I'm gonna put it on all the social medias. Please watch it. It's hilarious.
See, it's our choice to listen to comedians and happy things.
It can't be, you know, sometimes we've chatted about some serious shit for about an hour. You need a laugh at the end of that.
I know. And we all need a laugh in general. Yeah. Like, remember, because sometimes I get so like wrapped up and being like, oh, oh, everything is.
Yeah. Oh, sometimes we're so busy making important choices, we forget about the little lighter choices we can make every day. The choice to drink wine or beer.
Yes. Or like
the choice to drink rum on a school night. Not really. I will resist that choice. I will resist.
I was talking to Emma about how I was excited that I was thinking I might drink a glass of wine.
I think you should make that choice, Jessica. Make that choice. Drink the wine. I choose wine.
Yeah, I'll get a headache if I do it often. So like, it's like such a big...
Well, you best make it worth the headache then.
Yes. Well, I'm making a pot of tomato sauce today. So nice. Paul and I have been going and we like, there's this orchard near our house that you can just go apple picking, pear picking, all the picking, tomato picking. We have our own tomatoes, but we went apple picking and pear picking.
Yeah.
You basically just drive right up to it, get out. They're falling off. They're everywhere. You could get like 100 with barely getting out of your car, and then it costs like $2. We've been making pie and applesauce.
Oh, no way. Well, I've been doing something similar, but a little bit of trespass involved, but it's not too bad because I live on a council estate and it's in the process of regeneration. So they're moving people out and there's like boarded up houses, but there's a few. And in one of them, there's a garden. Okay, and I don't normally go into people's gardens and steal fruit, but nobody lives here. The house is boarded up, it's fine. There's an apple tree and a plum tree and grapes, but they're not quite ripe yet. I'm going back for the grapes. Nobody lives there. I'm not stealing, I swear.
Here, Paul and the kids and I would walk past this one house and that had this huge cherry tree. And there were so many cherries, I couldn't handle it. And they were not picking them. And cherries are expensive. I almost lost my mind. And we have a thing called urban gleaners here that will just come and come and get it. Then they give it to this one cider place. Yeah. They make cider for the whole.
Like, there's a couple of like charity things like that in different parts of the UK that I've heard about. But I don't think there's like a big organization. But how cool would that be? There should be.
For those grapes, holy crap, my mother-in-law grows a ton of grapes. And my brother-in-law, who is from Michigan, told me how he really likes frozen grapes. So we get these fresh grapes right off the vine. And then we clean them and put them in the freezer. So if you have not tried frozen grapes, anybody listening,
I'm going to try them.
Freeze fresh frozen grapes after you wash them. And it is the best. My kids love now. We all, for snacks and stuff, eat frozen blueberries and frozen grapes.
Oh, I'm going to try it.
It's amazing. And it's good with those little ones, not those big, huge ones from the grocery store that, you know what I mean? Like, that's not like a real grape. Grapes don't look like that. Little ones. See, you get advice here about food choices.
You get encouragement to drink alcohol on a school night.
Yes. And possibly the idea of going out, which is really I never know.
Out.
Ooh. Out. That I'm gonna watch it. So guys, if you're interested, we'll put up on our website or we'll put up on the show notes. We made a little website.
Yes, Jessica, before we go, talk about the website.
Yeah, I'm working on it and I'm not really good at stuff. I mean, I'm good at stuff, but like I'm not one of like
I hate you.
Skills are elsewhere. Okay. So I'm working on it. I'm excited. But we have a website and it will have a little subscription that you can subscribe and we'll send you information on our events. So we're doing a book club.
The book club is free, people. We've got tickets available. I'll repost those on the website, on the social medias as well for people who haven't heard about that.
Yeah, and we're doing tickets even though it's free, but we're doing tickets so that we make sure that there's, you know, we want to make sure that there's a small group of people so we can have a really good conversation. And we will be starting a writing group and a little membership forum and some stuff through our website for our
class. Exciting. Yeah. I'm excited.
It's exciting. So take a look at it. And
yes.
You know, our producer, Paul. I laugh because it's just, I was like, he's just,
I was laughing at Jessica's face. I wasn't laughing at you, Paul, I swear.
he does all the, he does everything other than this part right here where we're talking. he will put all that information up on the show notes, and he always does a little spiel too for us, which is good because we, Emma and I, really are really good at talking and giving our opinion and teaching, but we're not really good at marketing ourselves.
Yeah. I hate it. It goes against every fiber of my being. I'm not, like, even before I was like anti-capitalist, I was like, sit at the back of the class. I know the answer, but I'm not going to put my hand up. That's me.
But we really do want to have a community of people that are interested in the same things that we're interested in, and people that can talk about their experiences and in a forum that they feel safe and not that you're going to be judged or and we don't expect, you know, we both are really looking to start a, like, a very nice, non-judgmental occultist collective.
Absolutely.
So join check us everyone. Out. All right. We'll talk to you some other time when we decide to talk nonstop. Oh, I'm also, so I have an episode of Magic Cool that came out with my husband, and we talk about numerology with one of my
Look
students.
How awkward she is when she has to do a bit of self-promotion. It's so awkward. Magical podcast people. Magical, I love magical podcasts.
Well, it's funny because I listened to that numerology podcast that I did. Sid was one of my students from my Keystone class, and the way she talked about numbers was really fascinating to me and made me like numbers. So by the end, I just sound like, the whole thing sounds so silly. To people that think numerology is silly, you would listen to that whole thing and be like, your eyes had disappeared. They had rolled so far away. But I love it. And then I also was on Mana's podcast that came out today. So Real Witches of the End Times, our friend Mana.
Yes. And that's another good podcast. It's awesome. I love Mana.
Me too. She's like she's a younger sister for sure. So so I am everywhere talking all the time this week, guys.
She a podcast her.
Yeah, I do. Oh, my God. You guys, I want to tell you a really quick, funny story that today my kids were like – so we listen to music all the time. Uh-huh. We have one of those Google things in our dining room so we can listen to music. And I got it because my kids could call me on the cell phone too from my – the house without a phone.
Yeah.
So it was a nice, cool safety measure as well. But anyway, they were asking for music. And my daughter says, okay, Google, play S-L-U-T. And I turned around from the doing the dishes. I was like, what did you ask for? They're 8. They're 8 years old. And they had listened to, they watched a part of a movie of Pitch Perfect, I guess. and one of the songs from Pitch Perfect was S-L-U-T. And then we had to have a talk about that word. And that, when you said that, I was like, oh my God. It was such a funny thing. It was such an eye-opening experience.
Kids are hilarious.
They are hilarious. The and Pitch Perfect was funny. So
yes. It's all good.
Yeah. I was like, I don't care, you guys. Let's listen to this. Whatever. We didn't listen to that song. I just went to a different Pitch Perfect song. But the whole movie is like...
Yeah.
Of course. You're like, okay, I get it. All right, bye, guys.
Bye.